We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are doing our big promotion all of the big week of the big game. It is a Cup of Super Bowl week. It is Crab Cake Row. I'm wearing my Coco shirt. This will be the Wednesday stop. Monday, we will be at Fadley's, and I've been incorrect about this. I need to stand corrected. We're going to be in the old Fadley's, the original Fadley's, the one they've been in for 150 years. The new location, a new market, still getting built out. I was there earlier this week. It looks lovely. There's lots of construction people and stuff hanging on the walls. They're a few weeks away. We thought they would get in by February 5th, but we'll be at the old Fadley's on Monday, just as an aside. Tuesday, Costas. Wednesday, Coco's. Thursday, we're going to be at State Fair in Catonsville. Then on Friday, at Pappas in Cockeysville. Maryland lottery tickets. Fun people. People doing great work. Charity folks. Co-hosts you may know. This guy may be one of them. Luke Jones joins us now to recap. As we tape this, it's the end of the week. It's getting into the weekend. And Luke, this is my 40th year. Last week was it was 40 years ago last week that I walked into the News American with my father. My father got on the bus, took me downtown. We walked into the newspaper. It was January 23rd, 1984. So you do the math on that. I don't talk about that date much, but so 40 years into this, I don't know if this city, and we're talking Mayflowers, bringing the Ravens back. I was here for that. Opening Camden Yards, Cal Ripken, 21-31, big football games. I don't know that we've had tectonic plates shift, you know, underneath of the ground at Camden Yards the way we have since the last time you and I convened. But, oh, my God, what a week. It's crazy. From the baseball team and the football team and the football team and the baseball team and the losing and the losing players and losing coaches and then a new owner shows up for the baseball team. And then within 48 hours, they're trading for aces. I said, my wife came back from yoga. She was in the shower and I went in. I peeked into the shower. I said, they traded for Roger Clemens. So Luke Jones joins us now. What's going on? Minus Andy Pettit and the needles, but you know what I meant.
I know exactly what you meant. I mean, what a week, what a night Thursday night was. I think it was one of those nights that, having talked to a few friends of mine, seeing social media and the temperature there, I think you had Orioles fans who had trouble sleeping Thursday night. They were that excited. I think they were borderline giddy with how that played out. And it's ironic, one of the very rare times of over the last quarter century, I think the Ravens privately are saying, kind of glad the Orioles are making some good news in a week that's been really rough for us, you know, in terms of the disappointment of Sunday and Mike McDonald moving on. And we'll get to the Ravens. This is about the orange and black. And
we haven't done enough Orioles conversation since Arlington, quite frankly.
Yeah.
You and me.
Yeah.
You
know? Well, there hasn't been a whole lot to talk about other than Craig Kimbrell.
Well, it is amazing how Elias has been getting pooped upon by the fans. When are you going to do something? When I get a real owner, dude, how about I get a real owner? You know, like we've been saying that for 40 years, but to get a real owner.
Well, I mean, you figured a trade was coming at some point in time, right? I mean, we've talked about that for the better part of 2 years now, considering where this farm system has been, where it is now, and where it will continue to go with the pipeline that, even after trading DL Hall and Joey Ortiz for Corbin Burns, remains very, very strong and should for the foreseeable future. But you have to go back, and I was trying to think about this Thursday night. The last trade of this magnitude that wasn't trading away Manny Machado or Kevin Gausman or Jonathan Scope, or, you know, go down the list of the teardown 5 years ago. I mean, it's been a long time since the Orioles have made a move of this magnitude, and to acquire someone who's a couple years removed from being Cy Young of the National League, someone who led the league in led the National League in strikeouts in 2022, who's coming off of, quote, an off year when he had an ERA that was still in the low threes, that speaks to what the Orioles are acquiring here. And it's terribly exciting, especially when you're already talking about the excitement of Kyle Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez and John Means coming back healthy after Tommy John and his
and 101
late season
wins. 101 wins speaks for itself.
Right, right. I mean, there's so much, as much as we were talking about the lease and ownership and to your point, waiting for Elias to make a move, waiting for this organization to spend money and how ownership was tied to that. Even with all of those factors in, there was still a lot of excitement. Most of a 100-win club was was returning. So you add Corbin Burns to the mix now, and just goes back to what I was talking about a few days ago when we were talking about the news breaking of the imminent sale and the pending sale of this franchise. The elevating of expectations, right? Raising expectations, raising the bar. That didn't take much, but boy, to your point, Mike Elias didn't waste any time here in acquiring one of the very best pitchers in the National League over the last 4 years. So it's exciting. I mean, this is one of those scenarios where you dream about the possibilities. You think about understanding health is always a factor and understanding you have to go out and do it. But you think about the potential of a top three in October of Corbin Burns, Kyle Bradish, and Grayson Rodriguez, and the elite upside that the last two bring, if they can even just take a modest step forward from what they did the second half of last year, boy, that's a scary top three going up against just about anyone in baseball. So it's really, really exciting. It's a great day, a great week for the Baltimore Orioles and for a fan base that has been thrown breadcrumbs at best for most of the last 30 years.
I was going to say beleaguered, but I don't know. Beleaguered doesn't even like describe where the hell I am. You know, I mean, I'm going through just an emotional roller coaster as a reporter as well, because I've been on the phone from the minute this happened. I mean, I got a lot to lay on you about what I know, you know, like literally about the deal and about the timeline of all this, but let's stay on the field for a minute and just talk about Elias. I'm pretty convinced Elias didn't know he was selling the team. I'm pretty convinced he lied to Elias the way he lied to Westmore, the way he lied to Brooke Learman, the way he lied to Derek Davis. He's a freaking liar. I'm glad I called him that in July. And now anybody that read my stuff will know I've been honest. So the part where Elias does a caravan and they all go out and he had to speak of it, and this speaks of how owners and baseball people and sports people have to get along behind closed doors and have to have one song they're singing when the door opens. But Elias was sort of watering people down a little bit by saying all those things you said. We won 101 games. We're not going to do anything dramatic. I mean, my read is this, and I don't know this to be factual, but I think this to be factual. Elias wasn't going to go dealing young players away while this creep owned the team, in the thought that he's not going to sign Burns anyway. So why are we going to deal youth away if I have no commitment to sign him? I mean, this is the Roquan Smith deal, right? To bring the football part in here. If you're Eric DaCosta and you have no confidence that you can sign the player and you have no confidence that your boss will pay for it, and football's different because the money's sitting there and Eric doesn't have to go fight with Steve Bisciotti about money. That's the way football's set up. Here's the money. Mm-hmm. Roger says, here's the number and there's your number. And Pat Moriarty has the bean count it. Right. So baseball's different though. And if you got DL Hall, right. If you got these assets, right. In your organization, no, you can't play five middle infielders. Right. But when you have these assets to deal them off for a rental before the season begins, trade for Burns and for half of it July 31st if you're going to rent him. But I would think that this is the precursor to real contracts here. I would think. And I would also think for Elias, if John's gone spiritually in regard to, I don't have to talk to him anymore. And I know this to be true because this really does tie into the ownership. Rubenstein doesn't own the team. And this could still get screwed up. I mean, mm-hmm. Every person I've talked to said, this is the Angelos family. They're volatile. They're dishonest. They lie. They change terms all the time. Call the people down in Vero Beach. They thought they had the Orioles at spring training. You can go look at all the headlines. Their board of elected people voted and did all that. They thought they had a deal. They did not have a deal. So there is that part of it, but there's also the part where John's torched every bridge there is. Mom wants to sell the team. This is important to Mom, not John. And it's Mom's team, really, at the end of the day. And Mom wants out. And all of these pieces, I mean, Elias can't do this. People are writing to me on Thursday night saying, is this a coincidence? No. There's nothing coincidental about this deal happening after the announcement of the transfer of power that hasn't been transferred. But I think everybody's in agreement here that Elias is going to have a new boss by the middle of the season. And whatever, he's not spending money right now, right? He didn't spend any money on this deal. He just acquired a player. But the confidence level is, if Mike Elias is going to keep this job, he's not going to keep this job as a Tampa Bay. We're just going to like age everybody out and do what Milwaukee just did, quite frankly, which is grow a pitcher and deal a pitcher, or grow a Machado and deal a Machado. That is really about confidence level of ownership to be able to spend money, sign players, operate like a real team. And I feel like that this is it's a coming out party for Mike Elias in that way, because he's done everything but this, and he hasn't had the ability to do this. And it does take a different boss or a different vision over the hill to say this franchise is going to be a different franchise by August 1st, by the trading deadline. Because everybody's told me that I've talked to, don't expect this transaction to close right now. This is not happening April 1st. This isn't happening by opening day. But I've been told this. John Angelos will not be the owner appeared on opening day. He's not coming back into the building. He's not coming back to say goodbye to people, to embarrass himself, to thank them for their service, to, you know, shake Rock Kubako's hand and say, you're a good boy. Like, he's not, the word is, he's made his last decision, but it's not a deal yet. And Rubenstein knows that, and all the investors, like, these are hard, really detailed transactions. This is not something they could do. Even if Peter died and John died, mom said, where do I sign? Just getting paperwork together at this level. This is a 60 to 90 day process. The league has to agree to it. There's a league meeting next week where they'll get briefed. There's a letter of intent. I learned that, but there are not they're not documents at all. None of that exists. And patience will be the word for the fans. But there was no patience for Mike Elias. He's like, I got a season to start. Let's go get a pitcher. And it's beyond exciting. I've owned the station 25 years. I can't, and I admitted this to you privately. I'll admit this on the air. I can't literally remember a time where I walked into Camden Yards and felt welcome by them. And I'm talking about early on. I'm talking about 94, 95, 96. It got bad quickly. From a morale standpoint, from even when they had Jimmy Key and BJ Surhoff and Sid Fernandez, like all those guys, it was a really dark place to be from the beginning. And I know you've been there 15 years. I'm going back 30 years ago, the whole time they've owned it. I expect completely different oxygen right away. And Corbin Burnes is that oxygen.
Yeah, I mean, there was already good feelings about the way the team was playing. I mean, they won 101 games, but when you bring in an ace, and look, I'm not going to make any assumptions about what Corbin Burnes' future is going to be beyond this year. I think you look at this deal, even as a rental, DL Hall. Look, we've been talking about DL Hall for 6 or 7 years now, and he's been one of their best prospects, but time on task. Injuries have really stunted his development as a starting pitcher, to the point where you and I, the few conversations we've had since the end of last season, have talked about DL Hall being in the bullpen. Does he become the Brewers' next Josh Hader? It's possible, but Corbin Burnes, it's possible, could pitch the Orioles to the World Series this October. So I think you have to look at it through that lens. Joey Ortiz, we've talked about him. Look, great defender. I think he's going to be a legitimate defensive major league shortstop. He had an excellent season at the plate at AAA Norfolk. He's blocked. I mean, there wasn't room for him this past year, let alone talking about Jackson Holliday being in the majors at some point in 2024. So even if this is a one-year rental, even if this is a case where the Orioles look at Corbin Burnes and say, we really like him, but we don't want to marry him for the next 5 years because we have eyes for another pitcher that might be out there that we might sign with our new ownership group next offseason or whatever it might be. Or it might just be that Kyle Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez become legit number one and number two starters for any team over the course of the 2024 season. So this isn't, for me, I don't sign off on this deal with the caveat that they have to sign Corbin Burnes long-term, but the sheer possibility of that being on the table, which would not have been the case a week ago, let alone talking about for years and years going back under the Angelos regime. It's terribly exciting. So for whatever it is, and you know, to your point, let's face it, Mike Elias, if we know anything about him over the last five going on 6 years now, it's been very methodical. So while certainly you look at the developments of earlier in the week and you look at the timing of this, I also think Mike Elias has done groundwork with teams and had talked with Milwaukee about the possibility of this. But again, with the news breaking earlier this week, yeah, how can it not be? How can you
I think
not
when
look
Mike
at
Elias
it?
Was watching the football game on Sunday, I think he probably thought John was staying in for a while. Like, I think he probably was lied to like everyone. I don't think he was the one that John pulled up and said, hey, I'm getting rid of the team. You're going to be operating differently. I don't think it's that normal. You know what I mean? Like, and if anything that was brought out to me about anybody's optimism, and I'm not going to put a wet blanket on this at all, but they're a volatile family. They're a dysfunctional family. And for that, the people involved in the deal expect bumps. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying.
And
like,
they're usually, and I would say in general with these, because of what you just said, it's a multi, okay.
It's a billion.
It's $1.7 billion. I mean, think about the size of the Lamar Jackson contract and then multiply that by seven, right? I mean, that's
all I can think about is a billion seven is how much of the franchise does Chris Davis own?
Yeah.
I thought so, the sale price is 10% of his salary.
Right. So, I mean, it's just it's wild to just think about this. But look, is it possible that Mike Elias had some inkling that something was going to happen at some point in the not too distant future? Sure. Is it possible he was in the dark just like everyone else? Wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. I mean, let's call a spade. You know, the dishonesty has been obvious. So
calling Angelos and Angelos.
That said, like I said, Elias also has not been someone who's gone out there and done something on a whim. So do I think that his first conversation with the Milwaukee Brewers occurred after Tuesday's news broke? No, I think there have been talks, maybe even going back to last offseason, but we know Elias has been very conservative for some of the reasons you stated and because he doesn't want to give away the farm system. And let's face it, we've talked about Dylan Cease now for going on close to a year. It's been very apparent through various reports that the White Sox have asked for the moon. Mike Elias, just because he has the moon in prospects, wasn't going to give them the moon. So, you know, you pivot and you look at all the different possibilities, including free agency, but you come back to this and you say, okay, Corbin Burnes is making $15.6 million. That's a steep investment relative to what the Orioles have spent in recent
their
years.
Their payroll.
Sure. So, but that said, they spent $13 million on Craig Kimbrell. They have a boatload of players getting raises in arbitration. And now Corbin Burnes for $15.6 million. This is going to be a pretty sizable increase in payroll. Now, I'm not saying that for as a cautionary tale or anything like that, but it just speaks to we are starting to see the ball move in that way. And we'll see if they re-sign Corbin Burnes. But if they don't, I think this is all, even if it's just 1 year of Corbin Burnes, I think what the Orioles have given up is an acceptable price. I don't think this is, oh my gosh, they gave up the stars for 1 year of Corbin Burnes.
It doesn't smack of desperation, that's for sure.
No, I think it smacks of we have a 101 win team coming back. We very clearly needed a top of the rotation starter or top half of the rotation starter. And this guy absolutely checks that box, not as a top half, but as a number one. And now Kyle Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez as the two and three looks dynamic, looks elite in terms of how you slot guys in a starting rotation for a contending ball club. And that's not even talking about John Means or Dean Kramer as your projected number five starter right now, who is pretty decent. So, I mean, this is exciting. I mean, the possibilities here. I mean, you look at this starting rotation. I don't want to call it the 1971 Orioles because that would be hyperbole and disrespectful.
I hope they wear the orange uniforms at least.
Yeah. But you look at the potential and elite upside of this rotation with Corbin Burnes being what he's been for 4 years now. Kyle Bradish doing what he did for a full season last year, Grayson Rodriguez doing what he did in the second half last year, and knowing about his pedigree as an elite pitching prospect over the last couple of years. Nestor, it's been a long, long time since you could talk about the Orioles with a top three of that magnitude, that caliber. How it looks on paper right now already looks really good. The upside is elite. The upside is talking about it being one of the best top three in baseball. I mean, that's what you're talking about there in terms of potential. And again, you have to go out and do it, and guys have to stay healthy. And look, even expensive pitchers like Corbin Burns break sometimes. So yeah, there's always going to be the fingers crossed, but that's for every team. You know, that's every franchise in baseball, whether you have an $80 million payroll or a $300 million payroll, as the Mets can attest to last year with how things fell apart for them. So, you know, there are no guarantees, but how this looks on paper, boy, it is terribly exciting. It is uncharted territory. It is the Orioles fans having the kind of thoughts that, you know, used to be with caveats. If everything went perfectly, this could happen. Now this is a case of things still have to go well, right? You don't just roll the ball out and expect to win, but you look at this thing on paper, and it was wild to see national baseball reporters and analysts on social media on Thursday night flat out saying, forget about the Yankees. The Orioles are the favorites in the AL East. And, you know, individuals drawing the comparisons with what the Astros did, and they got to a certain point and they went and got Justin Verlander, and they're comparing this moment to the Astros going and getting Justin Verlander. So look, I'm not saying Corbin Burns is destined for the Hall of Fame like Verlander, but the point is you're talking about a guy that is only a couple years removed from a Cy Young and should fit in very well at Camden Yards with the spacious left field. Oh yeah, there's still that as we talk about trying to attract pitchers here in Baltimore, in addition to just being a really good franchise that's coming off a division title. So, you know, he's got maybe the best cutter in all of baseball. I mean, just a nasty, nasty pitch. Orioles saw firsthand. He shut him down in June last year in Milwaukee. I mean, absolutely, you know, completely dominated them. He pitched really well at Camden Yards in April of 2022. Ironically, it was the day that John Means left with an elbow injury that, you know, for getting Tommy John. It's a long time ago, you know, almost 2 years ago at this point. But they've seen Corbin Burns up close just a couple times. And look at the numbers. I mean, you're talking about someone who his worst, and I use air quotes with worst, ERA over the last four seasons was last year, 3.39. I mean, it's, you're
I'll
talking about,
it.
Yeah, misses bats. I mean, it's exciting. You know, like I said, the ERA has got trended up the last couple of years. So if you want to call that a red flag, I think that might be too strong, but it's something to monitor. But at the same time, that's where we go back to. It's a one-year deal. See how this looks. See if you fall in love with him. See if he falls in love with you and your city that should be as enthusiastic as ever about the baseball team in 2024, and see what ownership thinks and where they are. So, you know, it would have been impossible to imagine this happening anyway, but at the very least now with a new ownership group coming in and with all
the
caveats.
Would it have been impossible? The 15 million, right? Like literally the 15 million is
the 15 million. And to your point, Elias being more reluctant to give up on prospects, knowing the ownership situation and the long-term vision being unclear on that front. I mean, it's not something the Orioles have done. I mean, think about it. You know, even going back.
Well, they haven't been good enough to deal into getting an ace that could come where they've been a division winner. They haven't been a division winner. That you know, that's part. But you're right. Back in 12 to 16, they gave up on the Machados. They're doing what the Brewers did. They were waiting for Rutschman to get ripe and then dealing him in 2026 or whatever, right?
And even in 2014, okay, they would have been ripe to acquire an ace then, but one, you'd always have the question of the cost, even though their payroll was much higher then and was more competitive at that point in time in terms of where it ranked in baseball. But they didn't have the prospects to acquire. They didn't have the guys to go out and get a Corbin Burns. Or it would have been like, okay, you're giving up Dylan Bundy, who at the time was viewed as one of the very best prospects in baseball. And then, oh, your system's picked clean then. So this is a case of they look, I don't like giving up DL Hall just in isolation, in a vacuum. I do look at the bullpen and still say, I'd still like to see them, and it doesn't have to be by opening day. I'd still like to see them get another late inning, high leverage arm, because you know Felix Bautista's not pitching this year.
Well, you believe to some degree DL Hall could have been Kimbrel, right? Like DL Hall could have been the closer on the cheap. If they're on the cheap and they're going to win 78 games this year and they're just figuring it out, they would say to DL Hall, be the closer till.
Because we're
getting away on the cheap, right? So that if they had a player like that, they would have utilized that play. I mean, I'm going back Brady Anderson era, whatever. That's how they would have utilized that. Zach Britton, who they didn't pay, right? I mean, like literally.
I mean, it's just, you know, DL Hall is someone that I certainly identified. At this point, I think the ship was really starting to sail as far as him as a starter. And maybe Milwaukee, as they're entering this rebuild, reload, whatever, retool, whatever they're doing.
They're trying to get a stadium built is what they're trying to do.
But the point is, maybe they revisit him as a starter because it makes sense for the time being. I mean, he's 25, but he's still only 25. But I think for the Orioles, for me, I was looking at DL Hall as, okay, you have Craig Kimbrel. He certainly brings experience. I'm not saying that he's not going to be the closer, but is he the dominant guy he was 5 or 10 years ago? No, he's not. I mean, that's been evident the last couple of years. But he's still good, but you still need some other guys. And we saw that down the stretch, right? I mean, especially when Bautista went down, you're looking at the back end of that bullpen, and how many times did you hear me say, not missing enough bats, not missing enough bats. DL Hall missed bats. So, you know, I definitely think they're going to have to add someone. I think this move with the rotation looking the way it does right now, I think increases the likelihood of Tyler Wells being in the bullpen. And we've seen him, including late last year, look promising in that kind of a role. So, you know, I still think you need not a closer per se. I mean, Craig Kimbrel is going to be the closer, at least to begin the season. I mean, they're paying him $13 million, but I think you need another arm to fit into the eighth, ninth inning, depending on the night, depending on the matchup, depending on who's fresh and who needs a night off and all that. But that is a relative concern compared to what the Orioles and what Mike Elias just pulled off, which is acquiring a legitimate ace. I mean, this isn't, with no disrespect to someone like Chris Tillman, who had a really good run as a top half of the Orioles rotation and their de facto ace. When they in
or Brady, Bradish is at this point, right? Bradish is sort of kind of an ace, but we're not really.
Well,
right?
But you know, I give Kyle Bradish a little. What he did last year was way better than anything Chris Tillman did. I mean, he was very legitimate when you look at his numbers.
Well, there would have been a thought. Well, we already have an ace in Bradish, and we already have a Rodriguez who could become our Jim Palmer, and these are the two guys we're gonna. There are McDonald and Messina or whatever you're gonna say. They just, to your point, they trump their two starter, and now he is a two starter, and that's a good place for him to be, having been sort of a 1 year wonder so far in Bradish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd say 1.5. I mean, go back and look at how he pitched, you know, in 22 from like July, late July on, but your point's well taken. And look, a year from now, it might be Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez 1-2, or Grayson Rodriguez Bradish 1-2, and Corbin Burns leaves and they go acquire someone else or sign someone else at that some point in time. That's why I said I love this move without even knowing if Corbin Burns is here beyond 2024. I love the fact that he's here in 2024 because it puts less pressure on Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez. The pressure that last October, let's call a spade, they weren't quite ready for it. That doesn't mean they won't be ready for it this October. But I mean, that top three, and then factor in John Means, who when he's been healthy, it's been really good. Now he's your number four, and now Dean Kramer is your number five. And, you know, you're still going to have – you have some depth in terms of guys like Cole Irvin and some other guys in their system that are getting closer to being ready. So it's not as though they don't have other options if they have an injury or two. But when you look at the upside, when you look at how this thing looks on paper, I mean, it's been a long, long, long time since the Orioles have had a rotation with the potential of this one and the way it looks on paper right now. Like I said, Corbin Burns is really, really good. I mean, misses bats. He's been pretty durable over the last couple of years. I mean, 193 innings last year, 202 in 2022. As I mentioned, he led the National League in strikeouts 2 years ago, and a Cy Young Award winner. This isn't the Orioles acquiring someone who won the Cy Young 12 years ago. This is the Orioles, you know, like I think back to when they signed King Felix to be in the, you know, who didn't even make it out of spring training. But Yeah, this is someone.
Well, dude won the Cy Young, and then the Brewers went to war with him in arbitration, right? Pissed him off, like the whole deal, right?
Sure, yeah. I mean, and look, that happens places. We've seen it
I
happen
like guys
here.
that come here pissed off. That's good.
I mean, this should be a great situation for him, other than the obvious challenge of pitching in the AL East, which is still a reality for the Orioles or any other team. You know, by the way, the rest of the AL East, you know what they were saying? The Orioles got Corbin Burns. I saw a number of Yankee people reacting to that. I mean, Yankees fans were hoping, when you consider how they're built with Soto and some of their other rentals, there was a lot of talk about the Yankees going out and making this move. Well, the Orioles just did it. I mean, think about that. Let that marinate for a moment. The Orioles just did something that Yankees fans wanted to happen. I mean, when was the last time we could say something like that? I mean, you go back to, man, you have to go back
I
to
don't
the late,
know. I,
late
I,
90s, what, Albert
think,
Bell,
but...
right? Which obviously was not a move that worked out well. But, I mean, it's exciting, man. I mean, this is fun. We haven't talked about the Orioles from an off-season standpoint like this, which is very Ravens-like, quite frankly. We're not talking about it with caveats or of, okay, well, all this, I don't know about. No, this is a great move. And
Dude, I've been on the radio 30 years, and I've never been able to talk about any of this because we'd always have to talk about the owner. And I don't know how I'm going to get used to that. I said that to my wife the other night. I'm like, and I said that to you. I had a little giddy moment with you where I was sending you some text on Thursday. And I'm like, it's before the trade, by the way. It's before the trade, literally before the trade. I'm thinking to myself, I can love the team again. Like, I can put a hat on and it won't be like a joke. And I won't have people come up to me about it and asking me about these creeps and why I can't get along with them, because I don't get along with liars well. Because I have a microphone. And when they ask me to lie on their behalf, that just doesn't go well. It's never gone well for me. Liars have never liked me. So the notion that there's going to be some normalization of this and new people, and Greg Bader's going to be out on LinkedIn looking for his next gig. I just don't even know how to react, because I've never, and I mean this sincerely, I want to say this on the radio because I said it to my wife, and she knows because she lives with me. My son would know. You may know, but I don't know. You and I don't talk about it much. I never, ever, ever hoped or dreamed or wished or saw a day where I believed that somebody else would own the team. Like, I just believe these people were that. And believe me, when I talked to some insiders, they were like, the deal is not done. These are the, I mean, sure. I just want to keep saying, this is the Angelos family. Like, there has not been a scintilla of integrity or honesty or transparency or anything you can trust. They still owe me $30,000 from 20 years ago. And why do I bring it up? Because it was $30,000. That's why I bring it up. And it wasn't right. It was awful. Still awful. You talk about, if I were to get mugged on the street down here and some guy comes up, takes $100 from me, you'd be shaken by that. So for fans to say, why are you so pissed? They're liars who didn't pay their bills, right? So all of these years, I, you know, go down opening day. You know how I feel about the team. I mean, I feel like I can't fully commit. I never gave them money. How could I fully commit to thinking things had changed? And even we went to a playoff game 10 weeks ago, dude. I got treated like a criminal. Like, I don't know what else to say. And you got treated like a criminal because you happened to be with me. That's how awful these people are. So that's my last experience with Oriole baseball, was being in Arlington and not flying down there and not having any access. So that's how I'm still treated. And I'm just glad I don't deal with it 5 days a week, because I wouldn't want to be treated like that by someone like Greg Bader for the rest of my life. So I've stayed away. But in my mind, and I think in the minds of a lot of people, it's very hard to see a world beyond whatever your world is, right? Like, I would say it's very, very much like being a Cuban citizen, you know, on the island and saying Fidel's here forever. Like, it's just never, you know, Fidel is here forever. This is the way it is. It's the way it's always going to be. Just accept it. I was never, ever, ever willing to accept this trash. And I bet my life, my business, your future, my family's future on the fact that I wasn't going to play ball with these creeps. And I wasn't going to lie for them. I wasn't going to take a job for them. I wasn't going to, you know, be like Rock Kabako and be a former journalist that worked for them and then denied that they were the people that, like, all the crap that's gone on the last 20 years, even at, before Free the Birds, which begat Free the Birds. Free the Birds wasn't in, I think they're jerks, let's go run the world. No. This was about, this cannot thrive with these people. And it never thrived. 18 years later, they won 101 games. Still not thriving in any way for the city, for business, for the fan base, for buying tickets, for partnerships, for getting an all-star game, you know, doing the things that you want to do. They played, you know, played a couple playoff games. That's it. I feel for the first time in my life, like I'm going to be able to go down there and put a hat on and put my jersey on and really want them to win and want them to do well. And they might be nice. They might not, I don't know, but I'm willing to think about it in a different way than I did Sunday when the Ravens were losing. It's been a hell of a week, Luke. Have we mentioned that? By the way, football team doing stuff too, right? Like, so there's, we'll get to that, but it's been just a hell of a week.
It really has been. And just a couple things, you know, just to piggyback on what you were talking about. Again, the caveat, we'll continue to say it until it's official, right? Until the ink's dry, until it's, this transaction has been approved by Major League Baseball. And want to point out, most of these transactions over the years, you know, when you're talking about the transfer of ownership, there's usually a snag or two. But I think also when you look at the makeup of the new investor group behind, behind the scenes, you know, it's Cal Ripken, it's Grant Hill, you know, NBA great. I mean, it's, you go down the list, you know, other people with local ties, and people that are invested in Baltimore to varying degrees. So you have that, but there's still a lot of work to do on the business side. And we'll talk about this, you know, ranging from, you have renovations of Oriole Park at Camden Yards. You have the challenge of attracting and cultivating new business partnerships. You need to boost ticket sales. You have to figure out, and this is a challenge in all major league markets, finding the sweet spot for local TV revenue, not just what happens with Masson, but whatever, however it's reimagined.
They don't have a plan for that. I mean, like, nobody,
but they've got to figure that out long term. Yeah. I mean, and that's, again, every
that's
franchise,
yeah,
even the Yankees are trying to figure that out. You know, as you see some of the things they're doing beyond just, you know, Yes Network being what it's been for two decades. I mean, that's a challenge. So all those things are there, but the idea of now having unbridled expectations, the idea that you can now dream, no one's expecting that the payroll is going to balloon to the size of the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Mets. I mean, it's Baltimore, right? It's not a huge market, even Philadelphia or Atlanta. But, and I've said this for a while, I wrote this at BaltimorePositive.com this week, there is no reason the Orioles can't aspire, if they are run well on the field and off the field, that they can't aspire to be more like the St. Louis Cardinals, who, if you look at their market size, bigger than Baltimore. Is it drastically bigger? No. They have had a payroll for, go back the last 15, 20 years. Go on Cots Baseball Contract website. I mean, they track all this stuff team to team. They've had a payroll that's been in the top half, the top third of baseball for most of the last 20 years. They have been a team that's been very dependent and good with their farm system in terms of drafting and developing players. And then when those players get closer to free agency, keeping the ones that are the very best and the ones you want to build around. They are a team
dealing
that,
off Jack Flaherty to suckers like us.
Not necessarily Jack Flaherty, but since the turn of the century, the Cardinals have won 2 World Series, 4 National League pennants, and they've appeared in the postseason 16 times. Now, I'm not saying the Orioles are going to become that overnight. It takes a lot of
work. By the way,
can I just,
I don't want to be too interruptive, but I had a long phone call with a reporter on Thursday. And I think the reporter probably thinks I'm a jerk because I didn't get flippant. But I was about 5 minutes into explaining stuff, and I said, "How old are you, man?" He said, "I'm 38. I'm like, "Oh, my God, you're younger than my son." So you were 7 years old when Angelos bought the team. You don't know anything normal about like it. And he was literally, he's just a reporter. He's literally asking me questions. I'm like, and this is a plug for my book. I said, I wrote a whole book so that no one would ever get it wrong. And he was asking me, so when did this happen? And I'm like, 30 years ago, I wrote a book about it. Like, go check it out. But the part of the book, when you mention the Cardinals, is Bill DeWitt was going to own this team. Bill DeWitt had three different handshakes with Eli Jacobs to own the team, and Angelos came in and mucked it all up for his own benefit. Then he went to Bill DeWitt and said, Bill, I'm a good guy. Shake my hand. Shake my hand. We'll make a deal. And he brought Bill DeWitt and Bill DeWitt's money in and effed him. And Bill DeWitt, and he effed Larry Lucchino because he said, Larry, you're still going to be running the team. Of course, I'm going to be the key managing partner, but you're going to. They were both gone. And I said to this guy, I said, if you really, this 38-year-old guy, he's a baseball guy, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I said, count the accomplishments of Larry Lucchino and Bill DeWitt. You brought up the Cardinals. I didn't bring up the Cardinals. Was it 16 postseason? Like you're just throwing all these numbers out. All I wrote to this guy that was interviewing me, I wrote him back later. I'm like, Lucchino and DeWitt. He might not even know who Bill DeWitt is. Like, no, I mean, I don't know how many people in our audience know who Bill DeWitt is. D-E-W-I-T-T. His name was in the paper in 1994. He was going to be the Orioles owner. He never was. I said, they've got a fistful of rings. Like, if you just take the World Series rings from both of their fists, that they've been in, participated in, and won in some cases and lost in other cases for St. Louis. But one of them they lost to the Red Sox. One of them they were in together. So that's the pedigree we're talking about when you say we could have been the Cardinals. That's what this city should have been the last 30 years. So the fact that I can wake up and this can be a big Bob Newhart dream and we can have a second act, the Cardinal thing you speak of is what I think I've spoken of for a long time. And Bill DeWitt's name's always been on my tongue because it's always been the biggest – I've called it a tragedy, civic tragedy, that this family ever got involved with the team and the fact that there's an end to it. And I'm still young and in shape and on a yoga mat and breathing. Oh, my – and I got money for cold beer. Oh, this is going to be a good time. I've dusted off all my Oriole stuff. I even got my Alan Mills jacket out with my ornithologically correct bird on it. I'm all ready for spring training, Lucas. Let's go to Sarasota.
I mean, it's terribly exciting. And just a final thought on what I was saying of what the vision of the Orioles could be. And again, that's not going to happen overnight. There's a lot of stuff off the field business-wise that has to happen. And you know, you don't build a franchise like that overnight. I mean, even look at the Ravens. It took them, didn't take them too long, but from 1996 to what it is today, took a lot of work and they've had a lot of success, but you know, they weren't that in 1996 or 1997 or 1998. It took a little while, but I'll remind everyone, Mike Elias, we think of him as with the Astros, got to start in St. Louis. So is there in the back of his mind, and I've never heard him say this, you know, publicly, in the back of his mind, was there a thought that, boy, if we could get ownership that knows what it's doing, and doesn't have to be the best in baseball, but just be competent, this is something that we could build that could sustain and be really special and have a chance to win a World Series or two over the next however many years and sustain something and build a franchise that people can be proud in again, you know, proud about again, and sustain and build something that's healthy and thriving and something that people can be proud of. Again, that's not going to happen solely in 2024 just because they've acquired Corbin Burnes, but it's a really fun start and it's a really fun dream to have again. You know, it's the kind of dream that Orioles fans have not been able to have for a really long time. So really exciting week. Still a lot of work to do. Still potential pitfalls and snags, as you pointed out. And it's fair to point that out until it's all official. But it's hard not to look back.
That's why I'm not doing the champagne thing. That's why I didn't do what the guy did down at Camden Yards, go down and pop a thing and shoot a little video.
I'll say
I'm not there yet, but I am.
I think
I now see that day. I see that day.
I'll say this. I think if an Orioles fan wanted to have a nice pour of something as a nightcap on Thursday night, I think they were well within their right to have that. I think you can feel good about that. But yes, it's not official, but
Corbin Burnes is.
Corbin Burnes, official. I mean, I saw the tweet. I saw the release when they sent it out to my email. I'm just like, wow, this is real. You know, in the same way that we saw the release that the Orioles sent out, you know, a couple days ago, you know, as far as the pending transactions. So really, really exciting times. And to your point, we'll get to the purple and the Ravens in a moment, but you know, in a few moments and another conversation on that. But wow, it's just, this has been quite a week. I don't know where it ranks in terms of the biggest weeks in Orioles history, but easily one of the biggest weeks in recent Camden Yards era Orioles history. No question about it.
Luke Jones is here. We are ebullient on bullish on all things Bradish and Corbin Burns. You can find all yourself out at Baltimore Positive. We're doing live radio all next week, 9 till 5 each and every day. Come see us. Bring something nice for the Maryland Food Bank. We'll give you a free cup of soup or bowl. It is Crab Cake Row. It begins on Monday at the old Lexington Market, Fadley's on Paca. Tuesday will be at Costas. Wednesday at Coco's. I'm wearing my Coco shirt. Marcella was on vacation this week. She had the gear up for me next week. I'll be there on Wednesday. Resig is my co-host with a K on Wednesday at Coco's Pub. We're trying to feature 100 different charities next week. I'm in the 60s right now. I still have space to book more. So if you have a charity out there and you want them featured next week, throw me a note. Ness@BaltimorePositive.com. Thursday, we're going to be at State Fair in Catonsville, and then on Friday at Pappas in Cockeysville. There's no Super Bowl, but there is a baseball season. We'll get back. We'll talk some football as well. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.